basically, we're doing an oral history project about this desegregation and integration in the Lincoln County area. And our focus is not athletics, but anything that you can tell us, we're very appreciative and agree to if they can't.
Okay, sure.
I read the article. Yeah, that's why we're sitting down talking about integration. This is not really.
Yeah.
But I guess first I'd like to hear more about what kind of family background you have.
Yeah, well, to sort of set the stage, my father, George Studemeyer, was a county agricultural agent for Lincoln County, and we had a little farm south of town and through the woods, over the creek, up the hill kind of thing. There was a black community called Georgetown, which is just about not there anymore, but it was sort of at the intersection of, 321 and I don't know what you would call it, be on the way to Gastonia. But anyway, growing up, my brother and sister were much older than I was, and really the only kids I found to play with were with Blake's. And I sort of became a member of the family, and starting at probably around age, fifth grade, sixth grade, every day of my life I was over there playing ball or cards or something. Huh? Bid Whiz, yeah. Bid Whiz was a big game. It's a fast game of bridge. And so anyway, we played, softball, football, basketball, whatever the season was. Well, in around 1967, the first efforts to, the federal efforts to, this is Rita Blake. So we'll be by there in just a little bit, BJ, I promise. Huh? Well, you can ride with me if you want to. You can ride, it's up to your mama now. I'm not going to get in trouble with your mama.
He's going to go real way.
Yeah, why don't you get ready? You go home and get your homework done.
He's got that done already.
Yeah, we'll be by there in a little bit. All right, thanks, Rita. Anyway, around 67, I guess it was HEW or whatever, was it HHS then, I can't remember, began to put pressure on all the southern school districts to integrate. Well, in 66, the first formula was freedom of choice, and which meant anybody could go to any school they wanted to. Well, the results of that, there was East Lincoln, West Lincoln, Lincolnton High School, which were all white, and one black high school, Newbold, which was out here just a few miles in Boger City. Well, if you're a black kid, lived at the far end of East Lincoln County, West Lincoln County, you'd have to get up at 6 in the morning and catch the school bus at 6:30 and drive right by the white high schools to come to Newbold. Well, the freedom of choice was the first plan, and they were about three blacks who came over to Lincoln High School. And I can tell you who two of them were. Bobby Joe Easter, who played briefly for the Buffalo Bills with O.J. Simpson, and Sylvester Kanzler, who lived in Georgetown, who was a buddy of mine. He's dead. He died of kidney cancer about 5 years ago. He was in the Navy. And maybe one or two others, I can't remember. Well, anyway, the freedom of choice thing didn't work, and of course no whites went to Newbold. So April of 68, if I'm correct, Martin Luther King was assassinated in Memphis, and that really caused things to heat up. And basically they issued a court order or something to that effect to forcibly integrate schools. And the plan they did was to close down Newbold completely. And it became a middle school of some sort, predominantly black. But I would say roughly out of a student body of around 800, this is my wife.
Somebody wants to buy a book.
Yeah, we just...
What's the price?
$15.
15?
Yeah, if they want me to sign it, I'll sign it.
Okay, just have them come in here?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, unless you sign. Is it Rudolph? Anyway, so they transferred, I would say roughly 120 or so, 150 at most, black students from New Bowl over into the vastly predominant white high school, Lincoln County High School. Now, that year, 68-69, was my senior year and Boyce Blake's senior year. I was the captain of the football team, vice president, student council, that kind of stuff. And I mean, there was a lot of tension about the whole thing. And because the blacks weren't any happier about being forced to come to the white school, and I think the majority of whites were accommodating, but of course they were people that resented it and this and the other. Well, anyway, there were some fights that broke out and some broken windows and some broken light bulbs, and there was some few fights here and there, and there was an escalation of tension. People started pulling their children out of school. So at one point, about 25 or 30%. Yes, sir.
I just wanted to get you to...
Yeah, well, forced the integration in the fall of 68. Trouble broke out. There were rumors that the Klan was coming, which was bad news. And, well, anyway, since Boyce and I were compadres and played on the football team together, the football team was pretty well integrated. Because we had a common bond in playing football and all this stuff. Well, anyway, Boyce and I got together, and nobody knew what to do to, you know, get people to work this out. And so anyway, Boyce and I got together and formed this little committee, half white, half black, called Hand in Hand, purely student generated. And the flashpoint for all the trouble, believe it or not, was the selection of cheerleaders. And even though the football team was completely integrated, when they chose the cheerleaders for the year, they were all white. Well, that justifiably infuriated the black students because they had no representation, et cetera. Well, anyway, we met and met and met and worked out some compromises and around a variety of things. But one of the main things that we probably had the first sort of affirmative action program in the county, I guess, but we said that the percentage of cheerleaders should reflect, minority cheerleaders should reflect the percentage in the student body. And they sort of did it all over again and added two or three black cheerleaders. Well, anyway, things were calming down at the high school. Parents were letting the students come back, and then the Klan was coming. And I mean, this is the days when, I mean, they were bombing. I mean, not in Lincoln County, but, I mean, it was a lot more vicious and violent than it is today. And they were talking about calling in the National Guard. Well, what Boyce and I did, just for the hell of it, I rounded up all of my buddies. I mean, I had influence because I was, you know, captain of the football team, this, that, and the other. And, you know, people liked him, trusted him. But when the Klan marched, I guess it was a Saturday morning, we met them on the courthouse square with a combined black and white racial group of black and white teenagers. And we had a big radio going and just horsing around and laughing and turned what could have been a really ugly, potentially violent situation into... We just sort of laughed them off. Oh, I guess we're about 30 of us, you know, equally balanced. And then, yeah, we were just having fun. And it sorely disappointed the Klan. They took one look and said, well, you know. And I think there was a lot of modeling by the adults. Of course, the rumor was that there's all this trouble at the school and the black kids and the white kids couldn't get along and yada, yada, yada. And when this show was more symbolic for the community and the Klan than anything else. And, well, they just disappeared. They just left. And that was the end of it. And the rest of the school year went fine. And actually, it was Boyce and I had sort of complementary roles on the football team. I was a defensive back, and he was an offensive halfback. And we had been playing pasture ball all these years, and we had actually looked forward to the day when, you know, we could play real school ball. And, I mean, we just had a lot of fun. And the cheerleader thing was resolved fairly, I think. And I think having that committee, which I think was a bit of an innovation at the time, gave the black students a sense of representation, empowerment. And by and large, Mr. Fred Kaiser was the principal during that day. And he would follow our recommendations. I mean, there were some kids who had gotten in trouble over this, that, and the other, and that stuff was sort of forgiven and forgotten. And I think once that committee became a reality and the students saw results coming from it, but it was really sort of that basis of friendship, not, you know, between me and Boyce, but see, I knew everybody in Georgetown. It was a pretty, you know, I mean, a lot of them were here tonight. I mean, you know, some of the old crowd. But it was because of that friendship, familiarity, et cetera, that, and, you know, on the first day of school, it was pretty tense, and I waited on Boyce and grabbed him when he came off the bus, and, you know, just, I think a lot of the white students followed my lead, I guess, just because the friendship was so natural and long-standing. It's a good example, I guess.
You mentioned early on the tensions with the blacks first. Now, those same tensions even on the football
field? No, not at all. Well, I just think in football there was just such a common purpose, and it was just guys playing football. And quite frankly, black kids and white kids playing pickup basketball, this, that, and the other, wasn't terribly unusual, kind of. And it was interesting, though, that the trouble flared up between the white girls and the black girls, because there was even a bigger, I would say, gap there between the black girls and the white girls. They really had almost nothing in common, and the boys really, I think, had sports as a
common.
Oh yeah, I mean, we were looking forward to recruiting the new bowl players. No, I don't think so. You know, it was the resentment or the prejudice, at least in this county, was very quiet and not very overt. But it's there, and to a certain extent, it's probably still here. I mean, I don't know how much you guys know about Lincoln County, but in 1860, 25% of the population in Lincoln County were black slaves. There were three Confederate generals from Lincoln County. The irony of it, the youngest general in the whole Confederate Army was Stephen Ramsour, and the high school was named, the White High School was named for Stephen D. Ramsour, who was killed at age 27, Cedar Creek, Virginia. And the other one, General Robert Hoke, who grew up just right downtown here, was General Lee's replacement if Lee got shot. Then there was another one, Robert Johnston, who was less prominent, I guess. But, I mean, Lincoln County was very much of a hotbed of the Confederacy. And I think I told you some of the counties during Reconstruction weren't cooperating and were, you know, wouldn't fly the American flag and weren't letting the blacks vote, et cetera, et cetera. And, but the Klan, pretty well-known members of the Klan, had taken over prominent positions in the county government. And this wasn't peculiar to Lincoln County, but since the South was still under federal occupation, actually the head of that Troop C, it's the 7th U.S. Cavalry Regiment, Troop C, was a fellow named Tom Custer, who was George Custer's brother. And when Daniel Knipe joined, I don't know what happened to Tom Custer, but you know, they shipped out after they cleaned up the county temporarily. And they shipped the troop out to the plains, and then George Custer, you know, joined his contingency, which ended up by the Little Bighorn Creek in South Dakota. And Knipe was the only, and then Knipe came back after, I guess, I think he mustered out of the Army pretty soon after that, and came back to Lincoln County to live, and actually married the widow of his sergeant, Sergeant Bobo. So, I mean, for whatever that's worth. But, I mean, they're just all kinds of little trivia things that are interesting.
The Klan, you mentioned they were really strong in the 60s and 70s. Did the police have any say in regulating the Klan after the battle?
Yeah, I don't think there was any question that the police, such as they were, I mean, it's a small little town, did not support and would not have tolerated any abuse by the Klan. But as I vaguely recall, that there really wasn't much of a police presence. And there really wasn't even much of a turnout in general. I mean, people turned out sort of curious to see if there really was a Klan, but a lot of them were outsiders. So, but nobody knew who they were.
Didn't they think about bringing federal troops who decided not to pay?
Well, the National Guard.
Or National Guard.
And it was interesting, the paper here had a policy, and still has a policy, they do not give any press coverage to Klan rallies or marches in the paper, so as not to give them undue attention. But they did burn a cross on the courthouse square the night before that march.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I didn't sort of think about it. It was a tense period. But I really think things went a lot better in Lincoln County than they went a lot of the places. You see, out in eastern, western part of the county, in the rural parts of the county, the whites wouldn't sell land to blacks. There were some sharecrop, they let them sharecrop. But in general, whites, even in well into the 20th century, wouldn't sell blacks land. So there weren't that many blacks at all out in the county. And up until 19, into the mid-1960s, there weren't even blacks working in the textile and furniture mills here. Maybe one or two as trash men or clean up the toilet, but I worked down the year after I finished high school at one of the major cotton mills here, Rhine Mills, and they had 1, 2, 3, 4 plants, I guess. There's not one black working any of those plants.
Why do you think that was?
It's prejudicial. They're going to give the jobs to the lower middle class whites. I mean, unless they could find a job that, like cleaning the toilets or something, or that a white wouldn't take, but they just didn't. Now, Boyce, my buddy here, he died. His father, Johnson, came back from World War II with a distinguished record as a veteran from the Pacific, where my father was as well. And he got a job at the Long Shoals Mill, which was owned by the Mooney family, which is really one of the more progressive liberal white families. And Johnson Blake was one of the few blacks that got a job, and I think he got it by virtue of his military record. Well, I don't know exactly what Johnson did. I mean, in terms of textile work, but he worked down there 25 years. And then the other thing you should know, there's a Veterans of Foreign War, a VFW, here that, you know, is a veterans club kind of thing that has been here 50 years. It's never admitted one black. They had a swimming pool for about 25 years. Never would admit one black, even though it was a members-only kind of thing. That was nothing but a white-only kind of pseudonym. But there was an article in the Lincoln Times just about, 2-3 weeks ago, that the VFW was seeking black members. Well, if you go up here on the court square and you look at the monument of the Lincoln County citizens killed in Vietnam, 80% of them are blacks.
Nowhere for blacks.
That's why you had a lot of blacks drown in the rivers and creeks around Lincoln County because they didn't have anywhere to learn to swim. I mean, Blake and I we built swimming holes down at the creek on our farm property. And I mean, I just sort of did it for fun, but they did it to learn how to swim. And they didn't have any place to swim, the whole county.
Do you think, it sounds like the younger generation was a bit more open to this idea of immigration. Do you think the old guard, your parents, the generation before that, do you think they were just willing to accept? And how did they treat you
I personally never called any flack or criticism or anything about sort of spearheading this effort. But the general mentality, I tell you, was that, well, this is sort of the way things are. Why change them? You know, what's the big deal? Why integrate? I mean, the blacks have a nice high school, the whites have a nice high school. Why change anything? And I think they, in a way, sort of passively, aggressively voted when this little trouble did break out by pulling their kids out of the public high school. And this went on for a week or two until people started to filter back and things calmed down. But again, so much of it is subtle. And it's just sort of a subtle kind of racism.
Well, it seems like even for your parents' generation, that was just the way things
were. Yeah.
It would take some major, something different to change. And
Well, I mean, my parents were very, both of them had sort of tremendous compassion, I would say, for the underdog, for the disadvantaged, especially my father, who grew up sort of in poverty and so forth. And a little bit further south down in South Carolina, just sort of across the line, as was my mother. My mother was really from the North Carolina mountains, where the mountaineers typically, Scots, Irish, Scottish mountaineers, typically didn't own slaves. I mean, they were poor as the slaves were. And it was really plantation owners' business. And then my father had been on captain in the army, where at least his company, whatever, was fully integrated. So he had seen in the military a fully integrated model of working together, fighting together, and so forth. And I don't know how much that, but his whole, all of his brothers and sisters, they were of equal inclination. One of my uncles, Uncle Bob, was a professor at University of South Carolina in political science, was another sort of raging liberal during his day. But I'm not sure where they got their liberalism, so to speak. I think it was mostly just compassion and, Yeah. Do we need to close up shop, or?
Yeah, we do.
Well, what about, I'd be happy to, you want to hook up a telephone conference or something to that effect?
Yeah, I think we've got a lot of information here, but
if you don't mind. Yeah, sure. Why don't you, let me give you my card. Did I give you my card? I'll give you another one. When it's convenient for you, just give me a call, and it's easy enough to set up three-way telephone call, and I don't mind being recorded. And there you are. And we can finish up, round out, and the other thing I can do, if I can find a copy, is I don't know where all the copies are. They're all over the world. The book, Sometimes Memory. The book about the whole. I mean, it's first person. I've got three publishers looking at it, and we're just sort of seeing who's going to. Well, yeah, I'll just make a call. I'll send you. Do you have a card, or are you going to write it on the back or something? I'll just send you a copy of the book manuscript, which will pretty much. I mean, it's all true. I mean, it's pretty much tells the story in a more dramatized way, I should say, and we're actually, this may be a pipe dream, but we're actually in, what should I say, discussions with a Hollywood producer about a movie. I don't know if that's going to come to pass or not, but it would make a pretty funny movie. I mean, the Reader's Digest thing sort of focused on the sad ending, but really, I mean, the whole story, we really had lots and lots of fun growing up. I mean, just Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn kind of stuff.
Yeah, the Reader's Digest sort of mentioned a little bit, the youth of college. So I think I'd need to hear some
more stories. Yeah, I mean, we've got some pretty good stories, yeah, pretty good stories. You knew they were from Davis. I was telling them.
Girlfriend, it's the
Glamoury? That's a good Scotch-Irish name. Where, now, where are you from?
Dallas.
Dallas.
Texas.
Dallas, Texas. Your father went today.
What's he doing today?
Does commercial. Mother, they probably... Yeah, it's just, green.
It's Greenbrier.
Greenbrier Association. Small world. Well, your father couldn't be from McDowell's.
No, my father actually grew up in Oklahoma.
Well, we're getting closer. Not many Scots migrated to Dallas. Well, listen, guys, good luck. Hey.